Hello and welcome to the Every Child, Every Day podcast. I'm your host, Rob Arnold, Superintendent of Amherst County Public Schools. During the time that we are under the governor's stay-at-home order, I thought it would be important to provide some very specific advice to students and parents regarding different aspects of the coronavirus. Last week, we discussed emotional supports for adults and students. Today, we're going to talk to an expert about the virus itself and how to protect you and your family during the pandemic. Please join us. Today is the Central Virginia Health District, which is part of the Virginia Department of Health, the district epidemiologist senior, Ms. Haley Evans. Welcome, Haley.
Thank you.
So let's get started. I think this is going to be a good opportunity for maybe you to kind of clear up any misconceptions that some of the public may have, because obviously there's lots of information out there on Facebook and the internet, and we want, I've made a promise to our community that I'm only going to bring them factual, the best information that we can possibly give. So let's start here. What is the coronavirus and how does it impact people?
Well, the coronaviruses, it's a family of viruses, and they've been around for just about forever. The common cold is caused by one strain of the coronavirus. But COVID-19 is the strain of coronavirus that is causing the current pandemic, and it's the strain that caused the outbreak that was first identified in Wuhan, China, in December of 2019. So a pandemic by definition is a worldwide epidemic, and nobody alive has any immunity to it. So we're all susceptible to infection. And that's what makes this one a little bit scary.
Yeah. And so how does it impact people? What are the things that it causes?
Well, it causes a wide range of illness. Some individuals have no symptoms, but they are able to spread the virus to others. Some people have mild symptoms and just have maybe a little cough, a little sneezing, just kind of like a cold. And others are severely impacted and have difficulty breathing and require intensive care and hospital support.
So, knowing those things, what's our best measures for staying safe? What's your best advice for, especially parents with children? What should they be doing at home?
Well, the governor has placed us under a stay-at-home order for not all non-essential employees, and of course, schools have been closed. So, you know, put that social distancing to work. We need to stay 6 feet away from other individuals, but it doesn't mean we have to be locked inside our homes. You're certainly, you know, free to be in your yard, to even go for a walk around your property or down your street, realizing that if you come into contact with other individuals, just maintain that 6 feet of space and you can still have a conversation and enjoy each other's company.
Okay.
The other things that are important are frequent hand washing and avoiding touching the face and wiping down frequently touched surfaces with a virucidal product. And it will say it's EPA licensed to kill viruses on the label.
Okay. So there have been, I've heard different things about the different types of masks. They're starting to say that we do need to wear a mask when we're in public. What is the most up-to-date recommendation about masks, what types of masks, when to wear them, when not to?
Well, the CDC has changed their original recommendation, and now they do recommend that we all wear a cloth mask in public.
Okay.
And there are lots of great patterns on the internet, on Pinterest and some other sites. Different sewing and quilting groups are sharing patterns. So the patterns are out there. The materials are available. And people are sewing masks and sharing them with their friends and neighbors. Simply wearing the mask in public whenever we have to go out protects others from us. It's not really about protecting us, but by wearing that cloth mask, we keep our own, any germs we may be shedding to ourselves.
Okay, yeah, and that's an important distinction to make, that you're preventing other people from you giving them anything.
Right. No, realizing that there are asymptomatic carriers, so you know we could be sick and not know it.
And so, yeah, that brings us to kind of this idea about testing. You know, who should get it? When is it important? When is it not important to get tested? You know, there are so many people that have, like you say, that are asymptomatic and don't know they have it. So what are we to make of the testing issue?
I think that the testing is overvalued. You know, a positive test means, yeah, you have it. But it doesn't change the treatment. If you're able to manage those symptoms at home, we want you to stay at home and to isolate yourself and take care of yourself, stay hydrated and use, you know, over-the-counter medications to manage your symptoms. If you're sick enough that you need, you know, you're having trouble breathing, by all means, call 911 and go to the hospital. Those things hold true whether you have COVID-19 or influenza or any other number of respiratory viruses. So, you know, to have a test and know it's COVID-19 doesn't really hold that much value. And then to have a negative test means you were negative on the day you were tested.
Okay.
It doesn't mean that you were going to remain negative for the next day or any future time.
So if you do feel like you have symptoms, then you should go home. You should stay at home. Is there a time frame in which to do that? Whether you know you have the virus or not, you should just go home and stay there, correct?
If you feel unwell, certainly if you take your temperature and realize that your temperature is above 100.4 degrees Fahrenheit, you should go home. You should not be at work. You should go home and stay at home. Should not be going out to the grocery store or the pharmacy or anywhere to get supplies.
Right. So what is the recommendation as to the length of that staying at home? Or is it based on like your fever or something like that?
We ask people to remain at home until they have been 3 days or 72 hours fever-free without the use of fever-reducing medication, and it has been at least 7 days since the onset of their illness.
Okay. And I think that's important because you do hear lots of different things. You hear things like 14 days and that kind of thing. So thank you for sharing that part with us. There is something that kind of I know that I've experienced with the school community because, you know, if somebody were to test positive for the coronavirus, and there are oftentimes so many connections to the school because we're such a integral part of the community that people start to worry about whether or not they have it or could have gotten it and those kinds of things. Do you mind sharing with us kind of the Department of Health's process in terms of like what close contact investigation means?
Sure. So when we get a positive case, and I'll just back up just a step or two, COVID-19 cases are reportable to the state. So it's written into the Code of Virginia that directors of laboratories, clinicians, directors of schools, universities, prisons, daycares, all must report any incidents or suspicion of incident of infectious disease to their local health department. So COVID-19 is reportable. So when someone gets a positive lab result back, they report it to us. And we start by contacting the individual that tested positive, and we do a pretty comprehensive interview with them and try to help them figure out where they may have come in contact with the virus. And we begin to identify their closest contacts. And what we mean by that is people that were within 6 feet of the individual for 10 minutes or more. We start with 2 days prior to the onset of symptoms and work forward until that person felt ill, was sick enough to be either isolated at home or hospitalized. And that's how we determine the last possible exposure.
Okay. And so the fact that we're well over 4 weeks since we were in school, that anything that's probably happening now is well beyond the time where students and teachers and those kinds of things would have been impacted by this.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
And that's very important for my audience to remember, because we understand that there is fear associated with it, but I also want people to know that, you know, that the Department of Health is doing their due diligence in terms of investigating the contact that people that have positive tests. And if you did have contact with that person, it's very likely that you're going to get contacted by the Department of Health.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Absolutely. And, you know, if they have questions and they, you know, they're welcome to call, and we can make sure we're not, you know, trying to get in touch with them and haven't been able to reach them for some.
And I've told our community if there was anything that was school related, that I would be contacted. And so, thankfully we haven't had that yet. And that's a good thing. Is there anything or any things that as you've been dealing with this, that are really, I guess, not helpful misconceptions of all of this, things that cause more problems because this is what people believe and it's not true?
Yeah, I see people out wearing gloves. And gloves are okay in and of themselves, but unless you're changing your glove between every action, you're just substituting your glove for your unwashed hand, and your glove has quickly become contaminated.
Gotcha. Yeah.
So you can't pull on a pair of medical grade rubber gloves when you leave the house and go to the grocery store and stop and fill your car up with fuel and run by the post office and go home and take off the gloves and wash your hands.
Gotcha.
You know, you need to stop, change gloves, and wash your hands between every glove change. So I think people are really misunderstanding the use of gloves.
And probably the general public doesn't have that many gloves to be able to,
right,
to dispose of them and put a new pair on every time they touch something.
Yeah, right.
In public.
So, the best advice is just, you know, frequent and diligent hand washing.
Okay.
Warm, soapy water.
That's a good one. I did not even dawn on me that that's what we were doing. But yeah, that does make sense. Any other things that are happening out there that you would like to take an opportunity to stop?
Well, I do think people are more afraid than they need to be. This is a situation where we don't need anybody to panic, but we don't want anybody to ignore it either. But a lot of people are very fearful of this virus and think that, you know, if you get it, you end up in the hospital on a ventilator, unable to breathe for yourself. And that's not always the case. There's some people that have very mild forms of illness. Want people to, you know, be responsible for their own health, monitor their own symptoms. If you have trouble breathing, that's a medical emergency. You know, drop everything else and call 911.
Yeah. So it's, you know, don't panic, but also be respectful of the disease and do the appropriate things, the things that have been asked of you to do. And you've kind of laid all those out for us today. Well, Haley, I know that you are super busy, that this is something that is kind of come into all of our worlds and changed it. And I know that you're right there on the front line with it. So I want, on behalf of our school system, to thank you for what you're doing for this community. I really appreciate the work that you've put in and the help you've given me in kind of giving me advice on how to deal with some things.
Oh, well, thank you for spending the time and allowing me to share with your listeners.
All right. And so for the listeners, thank you for joining us today. So now two podcasts in a row, we've had really, really good advice from people that know what they're talking about. And so we want you to take their advice seriously and understand that if there's help out there for you, if you need it. But as always, we wish that you stay safe, and everybody have a great day.